not my comment,
but it's one by Srila Jiva Goswami. He says that the Paramatma realization is technical. In that realization, there is an abundance of Maya Shakti and a small portion of the Lord's Chit Shakti. The Lord's Chit Shakti is his aspect of knowledge. The consciousness, even the consciousness by which self-consciousness, that we are aware of ourselves, this is actually done by the potency of the Lord's Chit Shakti. But when the full realization of our relationship with Krishna, which means full realization of Krishna, we cannot realize Krishna without realizing our relationship with him. An actual realization of our relationship with Krishna means realization of Krishna. But that comes when we gain the shelter of the Chit Shakti of the Lord, the knowledge giving potency of the Lord, plus the Lardini Shakti of the Lord, or the Lord's spiritual bliss potency. And these together are the internal energy of the Lord, plus, of course, the Lord, the existential potency of the Lord. But these are the internal energy of the Lord. And when the living entity becomes fully qualified, and that full qualification is twofold. One aspect is that he is amal, means purified from all material contaminations and material desires. And secondarily, but also that on one side there is the freedom from material contamination, on the other side is a great spiritual desire to serve Krishna in a particular way. And then, by the grace of Krishna, or by the grace of Krishna's representatives, the exalted Vaishnavas, then by their blessings, then one achieves the shelter of Ladini Samvit, or Chit Shakti. And then when the living entity achieves that shelter, then he really blossoms. His true identity blossoms. Now our false identity is fully blossomed. That false identity, we see much of it when we look in the mirror. It's fully blossomed because instead of getting the shelter of this internal energy of the Lord, we have wonderfully achieved the shelter of the external energy of the Lord. And the shelter of the external energy of the Lord, which is also known as Maya, Maya Shakti. That type of shelter is compared to having attained the shelter of the keeper of the slaughterhouse. If he invites you over to his house, and don't worry about a thing, I'm going to feed you and take care of you, we can understand that it's only for the purpose of cutting off our head. So the shelter that we get of Maya is like that. It is meant simply for our death. And we've achieved that. It's our great achievement. So our situation is quite sad and quite dangerous. And therefore, Krishna so kindly organizes. He comes himself. He organizes the Bhagavatam being spoken, etc. He organizes devotees traverse the earth to tell people, wake up, wake up. Maya jale baddhoye. You are caught in the net of Maya. You have attained the shelter of the keeper of the slaughterhouse. Now get out quickly. Get out by calling on the names of Krishna. Mahaprabhu is calling you. So today we'll begin beginning the second chapter. We've already covered some of the second chapter of the Bhagavatam already. I believe it was text 30 through 34. Yes, we've covered that already. And today we'll begin at the beginning of the second chapter, because earlier on, in the prelude, after the first three verses of the Bhagavatam were spoken, then we saw the great scene of the sages of Namasharanya who had gathered. Why did they gather? Because Kali was approaching. Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel, the iron age, the age of hypocrisy, the age of cheating, the age of anxiety, the age of shortness of life, shortness of memory. This age was approaching where everyone's mind would be so disturbed and therefore unfit to practice any of the other methods of self-realization. Therefore, the sages were meeting to perform a sacrifice for 1,000 years so that they could forestall the effects of the age of Kali and save themselves and also save all other living entities from the plight of torturous existence that awaits. Unlimited desires. This is Kali Yuga. Unlimited desires, unlimited envy, and therefore unlimited unhappiness and suffering and frustration. So to save people from that, they question Srila Sutta Goswami, who sat upon the Vyasasana. And of course, the quality of one's questions, that one can question, it indicates the quality of the person. So these great personalities ask very, very deep questions. Very deep questions as to the very purpose of life. What is the greatest thing that one can attain in this life? The Shreyas. And since time was short, and no one would have the chance to go through the great, great, vast, practically ocean of Shastra, of scriptures. What is the essence? This is Kali Yuga. We need to know the essence. So what is that essence of Shastra? What is the greatest thing, and what is the essence of Shastra? And then, why has Krishna come? He had just left, actually, which is part of the sixth question, the third question. For what purpose did Krishna come? When a great personality visits a horrible place, like the king visiting the prison, the prisoners or people would naturally ask, why has he come to a place like this? We're not here because we want to be here. Why is he? He's independent. Why has he come? What is his purpose in coming? Naturally, one would be thinking, I hope it is to bring me out. But why has he come? So they asked that question. Why has Krishna come? And then they asked about the other incarnations of the Lord. First, the fourth question, those incarnations of the Lord who deal with the creation of the world. And then the fifth question, the other incarnations that come and display most wonderful activities. Let's imagine a person who is not bound by any law doing what he likes. Now, if that was a person of low character in this world, if he was not under the law, he would do abominable things very often. But what about the person of the most exalted character, and he wasn't bound by anything. He could do whatever he liked and you could see it. Wouldn't it be the controller, the creator? He's doing whatever he likes in so many incarnations. Tell us about those incarnations. They must be so wonderful. That's the fifth question. And the final question they ask, very interesting questions. Final question is, Krishna has left, we're asked about why he has come, but he has left and he has taken with him all piety practically, all knowledge, all religion. Now where is the shelter for those things in this iron age of Kali? Because religion means light and Kali means darkness. Darkness means ignorance. So as the darkness of ignorance becomes thicker and thicker in Kali Yuga, just like when the sun sets, as soon as it sets, there's, if you ever watch it, a big yellow ball of the sun nears the horizon and things are already getting dark. And then when the top of the sun vanishes beneath the horizon, there's a moment, a very interesting moment. Did anyone ever experience that? That it's gone. And then there's suddenly the mood of the whole earth changes. And then, but there's some light because the sun has just gone down. But after some time, that light too vanishes and the densest of darkness descends upon the earth. And as light goes, the demonic forces become more powerful as the dark, because the darkness is their breeding ground. They love, they get power in the dark. Even Rakshasas, it describes that when the night falls, the Rakshasas increase in power. I better stop talking about this or everyone will have nightmares tonight. But, so therefore the sages ask the question, now where will light come from in this age of Kali? Because Krishna has left, the Krishna sun has left. Where will we, shall we get light? Knowledge, religion. That was the sixth question. And we heard the answers to all these questions. Now, we'll begin in the second chapter. First, I'll again offer my obeisances. Shiguru, Shiprabha. Om Aganakaminandasya Janandana Salakaya Chaksus Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Hurve Nama Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam upakadamayam dadati savanantikam. So we'll begin the very first verses of the second chapter, the first five verses. We've actually already read text 6 and text 7 in answer to the first two questions. We'll quickly skim those as we go to 11. The first five verses of this chapter, the first is quite introductory. 2 and 3 are obeisances to Sukadeva Goswami, 4 obeisances to others. 5 is a glorification of the questions that Sutta has just heard, because they evoke Krishna Katha, and they had such a taste to hear Krishna Katha. And then 6 and 7 answer that, the first two questions. Then 8, 9, and 10 are together, and they tell basically the, oh excuse me, 6, 7, and 8 are together. The 8th verse goes with 6 and 7, and it expresses in, because in 6 and 7 it describes what is religion, what is real religion, the result. And the eighth verse really tells what religion is not. It says the same thing. And then 9 and 10 also speak to those of us the conception that we generally have of religion, meaning it is meant for our welfare. It is meant for our welfare, but in the sense of monetary gain, etc. And then the 11th verse, which will be the last verse we read, explains what is that tattva? What is the goal of religion? Understanding what? Entering a relationship with that tattva, that absolute tattva, that absolute truth, describes that substance. So that's what we'll cover today. So in the first verse, very, very, very simple verse, because describes how Sutta Goswami, who has many names from Harshan Sutta, Sutta Goswami, Ugashrava, he was so happy by the questions of the sages. He felt great ecstasy because they were a suitable audience for him to speak, because his desire was to speak about Krishna and they wanted to hear that, and all the questions they asked were evoking his speech about Krishna. So therefore he was very happy and very satisfied. He thanked them and he began his reply, and he's beginning to answer the questions. And in this second chapter, four of the questions are answered, and the two remaining questions will be answered in the third chapter about the incarnations and the purposes of Krishna's where religious principles have gone. That will be answered in the third chapter, and then in the fourth chapter there'll be more questions of a very exciting variety. But in any case, in the second verse, Sutta Goswami begins to speak. Now he just doesn't begin by telling so many things, because the nature of a Vaishnava is that he feels himself very, very incapable and insignificant. But yet he doesn't have at all an inferiority complex. Doesn't feel himself incapable, but rather he feels himself independently incapable, but dependently capable to an incredible extent. Because he knows that if Krishna wants something done, that Krishna can do anything. And if Krishna wants something done through even a person who is incapable, that thing can be done and it will be done if that person takes advantage of the mercy. So therefore, the first three verses that Sutta is speaking, he's going to be offering obeisances, which are glorifications of great personalities. And also, in that sense, it is a exposition of one's humility and dependence on descending mercy. Because in this world, this is practically the most difficult thing for a conditioned soul in Kali Yuga to give up. You can give up anything, but pride is very hard to give up, especially in Kali Yuga. Although we are penniless, we are proud of our pennilessness. This is the depth of illusion. So, first two verses, which are the second and third verses, is obeisances offered to that personality from whom he has heard the Bhagavatam from. When that personality, who was Sukadeva Goswami, spoke it to Maharaj Prakrit. And we'll be hearing of that later on in the first canto. So Sutta first says, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that great sage, Sukadeva Goswami, who can enter the hearts of all. When he went away
to take up the renounced order of life, sannyas, leaving home without undergoing reformation by the sacred thread or the ceremonies observed by the higher castes. His father, Vyasadeva, fearing separation from him, called out, Oh my son! Because just after his birth, Sukadev Goswami, who had stayed within the womb of his mother for 16 years, as soon as he was born, he left. He left home immediately because he was fully realized. He was already a Brahmavadi. He was already fully Brahman realized. He understood fully that we are all souls, that the nature of material attachment is just illusion. So therefore, not wishing to become entangled in that illusion, just after birth, he left home. He did not, even though his father was a topmost Brahmana, he did not undergo the reformatory processes, the sacred thread. He did not take initiation, which are the prerequisites for hearing Vedic literature. And hearing Vedic literature is the method of learning about the truth, about the absolute truth. One must hear, one must take shelter of a guru and hear from him. But Sukadev Goswami was already realized, he had achieved realization of that absolute truth, and therefore he did not wait for these reformatory processes for his second birth. This is Prabhupada in his purport, explains that the purpose of undergoing the second birth is that is called dvija. Dvija means the second birth. So one becomes a dvija. And then after sitting down, because that second birth, brahminical initiation, gives one the facility to study the Vedic literatures. And then by study of the Vedic literatures, one realizes the absolute truth. So when one has studied the Vedic literatures, then one is not only a dvija, but then a vipra. And then when one realizes the absolute truth, one is still higher. And then when one realizes it in full, then one becomes a Vaishnava. And that is the highest position. So the stages, one has to begin with this, the initiation ceremony, the reformatory processes. But he didn't. He just left immediately because he was realized. So his father, fearing separation from him, cried out, "Oh my son, indeed, only the trees which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation as the father, they echoed in response to the bereaved father." Because Srila Vyasadeva wanted to teach his so extremely qualified son the Bhagavatam. And he had been waiting a long time for him to come out of the womb. And then he immediately left, so he called out, "Come, please, come back. Oh my son. And very poetically, Sutta describes how only the trees, feeling also the separation from this personality, Sukadev, they echoed in response to the father. Now, Jiva Goswami has said something. He's made a few comments on this. One is that the reply that the trees gave was actually the reply of the Supreme Lord on behalf of Sukadev Goswami. Through the trees, Krishna spoke on behalf of Sukadev Goswami. And another comment, Sukadev, due to his purity, had not only gained the affection of his father, but the trees also loved him. And thus they replied to Vyasa's inquiry about his son. Because this is the nature of an exalted personality, one who is pure in Krishna consciousness, he is lovable for everyone. The Goswamis of Vrindavan were like this, such personalities. Srila Prabhupada was so attractively lovable. Text 3. So he left, unclothed, unreformed, but fully realized fully on the spiritual platform. Second verse, second obeisance. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, Sukha, the spiritual master of all sages, because the sages are on different levels according to their realization. And Sukadeva Goswami was on the topmost level because he was a devotee, especially by this time. So therefore, all sages can learn from him. Even sages, what to speak of unfortunates like ourselves, can learn from him. So obeisance is unto him, Sukha, the spiritual master of all sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who, out of his great compassion for those engrossed, for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge after having personally assimilated it by experience. This verse is loaded with meaning because Sukadeva was very compassionate. He had no need. And this question is asked later on in the seventh chapter. Why did Sukadeva, who was already realized, why did he even undergo the study of the Bhagavatam? And then, why did he undergo the trouble of speaking it? Why did he do this? And the answer is, he was compassionate. To whom? Who is this compassion directed towards? To the gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest regions of material existence. In other words, that no one can actually be happy in this world. It is impossible. And Prabhupada explains this so in a very almost archetypal Prabhupada paragraph here. He explains that it is not possible to be happy in this world. He says, there is no point in arguing that a materialistic man can be happy. No materialistic creature, be he the great Brahma or an insignificant ant, can be happy. Everyone tries to make a permanent plan for happiness, but everyone is baffled by the laws of material nature because the laws of material nature deviate shagunamayi. They are Daivi. They are empowered by Krishna himself, and therefore no one can go beyond them. Therefore, the materialistic world is called the darkest region of God's creation. Yet the unhappy materialist can get out of it simply by desiring to get out. Tatraloyam apimuyam ekalam. Unfortunately, they are so foolish that they do not want to escape. Therefore, they are compared to the camel who relishes thorny twigs because he likes the taste of the twigs mixed with his own blood in sex life. He does not realize that it is his own blood and that his tongue is being cut by the thorns. Similarly to the materialist, his own blood is as sweet as honey. And although he is always harassed by his own material creations, he does not wish to escape. Such materialists are called karmis. So the idea is that out of frustration or some good fortune, a materialistic person who has tried to be happy in the material world, he wishes to get out. And then such a person goes, when a person doesn't wish to take pleasure in the material world, he changes from being from a karmi to a jnani. A jnani means one who tries to live on the spiritual platform and does not wish to interact with the material world. He wants to live on the platform that he's a soul. So Srila Vyasadeva, out of his mercy, after compiling the Vedic literatures, wrote the Vedanta, which means The final conclusion of the Vedas, Vedes Chasavarahameva Vedyo, this is the Upasana Kanda section of the Vedas actually, and then the means that for the jnanis, and then for them to bring them still further even, the Vedanta is there. The Vedanta is meant for the jnanis, for those who are deeply interested in spiritual life. But when Srila Vyasadeva saw that the jnanis had misinterpreted, the Mayavadis had misinterpreted the Vedanta, therefore, which is considered the cream of the Vedas, therefore he spoke a commentary on the Vedanta, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he taught that commentary to his son. He wanted to teach it to his son, Sukadeva Goswami, out of compassion, so that the Bhagavatam would be spread. So Sukadeva Goswami was carrying this Bhagavatam. And therefore he spoke it to Prickett Maharaj, and then Sutta Goswami heard it at that time. Text 4. Next obeisance. This is a Puranic way to begin. Narayanam namaskritya naram tameva narottama devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayamudirayet. Before reciting this Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, this brings us, this is the boat that will carry us across this ocean of darkness. One, before reciting it, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi. Naranarayan Rishi, Nara and Narayan, they are the presiding deities of the Bhagavatam. And the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, Devim Saraswatim. This is unto Saraswati Devi. Saraswati Devi is the goddess of learning. That is, she is Srimad, she is the power of Srimad Bhagavatam. She is the power of the Bhagavatam's power. She is the true learning, actually, which is the Bhagavatam's power. And Devim Saraswatim Vyasam, and to Srila Vyasadeva Vyotha Todayam Udirayat. This is that which is meant for conquering material existence. So it also explains, it's also explained that all these are worshipable, Udirayat, and they should be chanted. And the meter of Srimad Bhagavatam is Gayatri, and is commenced by Gayatri. And Prabhupada explains, this may be followed, or this chanting of the sloka may be followed by persons who aspire to be preachers of the Vedic literatures and the Puranas. It is especially meant, this Bhagavatam is especially meant for them who desire to get out of material entanglement permanently. So after these obeisances have been offered, then next, the sages, rather Sutta Goswami, glorifies these questions that they have asked by saying, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna. Yat krita Krishna samprajno. Krishna samprajno means they are questions about Krishna. So this is really what has enlivened Sutta Goswami, because the sages,
Because he's going to explain this later, yatya bhakti hocha jay, that the perfection of religion and that which is to be gained is devotional service to Krishna. But here he's hinting at that already by saying, your questions, Krita Krishna Sam Prajno, your questions are glorious. Why? Because they have to do with Krishna. Because Krishna is all glorious, and because the questions evoke Krishna Kata, they themselves are glorious and all auspicious. So that is the only purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I've been justly, correctly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna. And if so, they are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. And another glorious purport here where Prabhupada says, the whole world is full of questioning, of questions and answers. The birds, the beasts, all men are busy in the matter of perpetual questions and answers. In the morning, the birds in the nest become busy with questions and answers, and in the evening, also the same birds come back and again become busy with questions and answers. The human being, unless he is fast asleep at night, is busy with questions and answers. And so also the lawyers in the courts and the students in the schools and colleges. The legislators in the parliament are also busy with questions and answers. And the politicians and the press representatives are also busy with questions and answers. Although they go on making such questions and answers for their whole lives, they are not at all satisfied. Satisfaction of the soul can only be obtained by questions and answers on the subject of Krishna. So having said this and explained the glory after offering obeisances and explaining the glory of the sage's questions and really of Krishna Katha, now he begins to answer the questions. He's just hinted that the greatest good is Krishna's service. But now he will directly say it. Savai pumso parodamo yaptir bhaktir hochaje ahaituki apatiyataya yatma supasidate. For the soul to be happy, he has to engage in Krishna's service. Bhaktir hochaje. This is parodama, the supreme occupation for the living entity. And that, yatma supasidate, this is the only thing that can truly satisfy the soul. It's a deep, deep, it comes so easily off the tongue, but it actually has to be realized very deeply. There's nothing that can satisfy us until we're actually on the level of bhakti to Krishna. The supreme occupation, Dharma. What does Dharma mean? That which sustains the living entity. So that activity which actually will sustain the living entity on the spiritual platform is bhakti to Krishna. And that has to be a haitikiya pratiyata. That means it has to be unmotivated and continuous for the soul to actually be satisfied. Since we've spoken about these two verses at length, we'll go over them quickly. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita jnanyatya suvaragyam janam chaya rahaitukam. So the result of this devotional service, this pure devotional service, is that everything that is required comes. Asu, jnanyatyasu. Asu means quickly. By performing pure devotional service, knowledge comes, detachment comes, bhakti pareshano bhava varaktir, anyatra triyesha chika ekakala. It comes. And it is not that one needs these prerequisite items of knowledge and detachment or sacrifice of charity to get bhakti. No, bhakti is satantra. Bhakti doesn't come from these things, it comes from itself. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur has explained the independent nature of bhakti. It comes only from bhakti. Bhakti comes from bhakti. It is independent. And other things beneficial. Yasyasti bhakti or bhagavara kinchana. Everything good will come from bhakti. And bhakti only comes from bhakti. And how to get bhakti? We get it from the Bhagavatam, we get it from the devotees, we get it from the holy names, we get it from the Dham. These things are bhakti. Bhakti is the internal energy of Krishna. And then, what about, because this is Parodhammo, but what about the other dharmas? What is their purpose? Vanashram dharma, very dominant. Family dharma, duty to family, duty to country, duty to one's own body, this duty, that duty. So many occupational duties one has. So, dharma svanustita pungsam. Vishvaksena kathasayat nutpadiyat yadiradim shrama eva hi kevalam. Very famous verse. All these verses in the second chapter are wonderful and famous. This verse means dharma svanustita, if one executes his duty perfectly, is what religion isn't. If one executes it perfectly according to the letter of the law, but vishvakshena katasuyat, but doesn't attain rati nodpadyed yadiratim, but doesn't attain attraction, rati, for vishvakshena kata. Srila Baladev Vidyabhusana explained that vishvakshena, Prabhupada translates vishvakshena as meaning the Lord or His plenary portion. Baladev Vidyabhusana means the Lord who is surrounded by His... He has servants everywhere. He has servants everywhere. One who has attendants everywhere as His servants. That's Krishna. So if one doesn't get, somehow or another, if one doesn't get a taste for Krishna Katha as a result of his duties, shrama eva hi kevalam. What does kevalam mean? Kevalam means completely. Completely useless. Certainly he, shrama. This is useless. Completely, certainly completely useless. Because the purpose of the vanashrama or any duties is to perform our activities in such a way that we can get a taste for Krishna consciousness. Because we have to get that to get out of the material world. Otherwise, what is the use of maintaining here in the material world very, very well and then dying a useless death? What do we gain from that? We have no eternal gain. Just lived a life uselessly. We've accumulated so much money, so many people like us, we've built this, and then we die, and we leave it all behind. The Prabhupada told a story in one of the little books that's recorded about a wealthy man who died, and in his next life he became a cobbler. And then when, as a cobbler, he came to the door of his own house in his last life, and his own sons beat him to get rid of him with shoes. Or Prabhupada would sometimes say, or he said at one time, that an astrologer said that Nehru has become a second dog of somebody in Sweden. So what is the use of getting up to the position of president or rich man or famous or
or this or that, or well loved by everyone, and then becoming a dog or a cat or a monkey or anything. So Shrama Evi Kevalam, but if we can gain a taste from our duties in life, if we can somehow gain a taste for Krishna Katha, that gain is eternal. And once that is planted in the heart, once that seed of devotion, once there's some bhakti in the heart, we will never ever lose it. And everything else, material, we must lose with the passage of time. So whether we are trying to get something with karma, which is basically, most people work, they perform their duties to get something for their body. This is the level that most people are on with their whole life, only concerned with the body. Decorating the body, painting it, putting this here, putting things there, around here, cloth this, on the shoes. Working all day just to do something for the body. And this is really, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, no better than animal life, and therefore we see people acting like animals. For the body, if you get in my way, claws and fangs in different forms. And then, somewhat better than that, are the jnanis who are really only on the mental platform, not only the jnanis, but the philosophers and the poets who come up with this ism and that ism. So if someone writes some beautiful poetry and he's really thinking so well on the intellectual platform, but then if his body dies, it's all finished. What is the use? So therefore, there is no satisfaction on the bodily or mental platform. And rather, why is there no satisfaction? And Prabhupada gives the example about the that one has, it's like cleansing the cage of the bird and neglecting the bird. There's that picture in the of the person is taking care of the, this will come out in the fourth chapter as well. There's the bird and we're taking very nice care of the cage and the bird is hungry, but we're just taking nice care of the cage. This is the cage for the soul. So we know the needs of the body, we know the needs of the mind, but no one has any idea of the needs of the soul, and that's being neglected, and that is the problem. What is the need of the soul? Prabhupada says it here. The need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage. We are trapped and caught and limited. And it is frustrating for the soul. We are being forced against our will to grow old and die and get sick and have this problem and that problem. Fully against our will we're being forced and we want freedom. We don't want to be forced. So the soul wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage. We are bound. And he wants to fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. The complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind and the forms of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord. Without that hearing and chanting, we won't be able to get out. And any occupational activity which does not help one achieve that attachment for hearing and chanting, the transcendental message of Godhead, is said herein to be simply a waste of time. This is because,
very strong statements by Prabhupada. Who else would say that? If everything else except those activities that bring us closer to an attachment to Krishna, names and his glories, they're a waste of time. People usually think that I'm religious, and thereby by religion, by my dharma, I will get artha. By my religion, I will get artha or wealth, and by my wealth, artha, I will come. I will have my desires fulfilled. But in 9 and 10, which are very similar, this is thrown out by Suta Goswami. Religion. Once saw a bumper sticker in California, of course, that said Jesus and wants you to be happy or something, and the S in Jesus had the dollar signs through it. In other words, you pray to God and the money will come rolling in. This is the basic concept of religion. But money isn't an end in itself, but with money you can gratify your senses, have all your desires to satisfy. But here, dharmasya of religion, he, apavagasya, is certainly meant only for the pleasure of Krishna, or liberation from the material world. Dharmasya, apavagasya, not the artha upakalpate. It is not meant for attaining material wealth to gratify one's senses. Natasya dhamakantasya kamo labhya hi smita. That the wise people have said that not only is religion not meant for sense gratification, that it is meant for liberation. The purpose of religion is to get out of the material world, not to enjoy in the material world. It's impossible to enjoy in the material world. And then, when wealth does come, some artha, nartasya, dhammakantasya, it is not meant, when the wealth comes, it is not meant to for sense gratification again. And this is very, very difficult to deal with, actually, even in Krishna consciousness, because when one, after one chants a while, or if one could give classes and tell it like that, so people will appreciate if one's an older and they'll give so much facility, and there's such a tendency when something passes through one's hands for some of it to get stuck. At least some percentage, you want something from it. And the most difficult to give up is this pratishta, the desire for fame, everyone to be well known and think, oh, he's wonderful. But this is all anatta, unwanted things, useless things. So these material gains, they are not the purpose of religion. They are not meant for sense gratification. Rather, whatever comes, whether it's fame or wealth or this or that, one has to be free from false ego. And then one can go back to Godhead. One can't want anything for oneself. So this can't be one's desires. The purpose of religion is not to have these things come to fulfill one's desires. So this is, I'll read the verse here. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation, and that, according to our acharyas, means apavarga, means the pleasure of Krishna. They should never be performed for material gain, and devotees of all calibers have to be careful of this. Always have to be careful of this. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. You have to be careful of this. So, if I can't desire at least a percentage for me, then what's the use? What? That means I shouldn't desire anything? So what should I desire? And I will say that that desire for something else must be very strong. So that is answered in the next verse. Kamasya nindriya priti. Very similar first point. That our desire should not be indriya priti, to gratify the senses, but there should be level jivati of it. Jivati means just to maintain one's life. One should maintain one's life. One has to desire that. One needs material facility to maintain one's life. So if that's, if to increase and increase one's wealth or whatever, material situation, if that is not one's desire, one should just desire the minimum to maintain one's life, then what should one desire? Jivasya tattva vigyasa. That one should desire to know the tattva, jiva, be very, very inquisitive about the absolute truth. That should be one's desire. There should be no other purpose to one's working except to increase one's knowledge of the absolute truth. Prabhupada in his purport says in the last paragraph, seekers of the absolute truth are never allured by unnecessary engagement and sense gratification, because the serious students seeking the absolute truth are always overwhelmed with the work of researching the truth. Such a big task, and we are so tiny and insignificant, and our capacity is small, and there's so many books, and there's so much to be done, and there's so many obstacles to be pulled from the heart. So therefore, the serious soul doesn't have the time or the energy to get involved in Maya, because his desire, he's being pulled. Prahlad Maharaj says this, that his heart is like his iron is attracted to a magnet, iron filings. So he says, my consciousness is similarly attracted to you, my Lord, to Krishna. So this is a serious seeker of the absolute truth. So vigyasya tattva vigyasya, jivasya tattva vigyasya, the living jiva should be inquire about the absolute truth. And what is that absolute truth? Vedanti tattva vigyas tattvam yajnanam adhyam brahmeti paramatmati bhagavanati sabyute. That absolute truth is one thing, one absolute adhaya, non-dual substance. But according to the method that we approach the absolute truth, we see it in one out of three ways. The Supreme Being Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of God. And the supreme realization of Bhagavan is Krishna. So if we approach as a jnani, we see the absolute truth as undifferentiated oneness. If we approach as a yogi, or a Hiranyagarbha worshipper of the Super Soul, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, then one sees the Lord as the Paramatma, the same absolute truth. But if one is full of love for that personality of God and yakti of bhakti at Hochaje and has bhakti for him, then one will see that absolute truth as Bhagavan, but Narayan or Krishna. It's very wonderful. I think we could speak so much more on this. But this is the Bhagavatam. If one keeps on hearing, one It's for the serious. It's for the namatsaranam satam, those who are pure in heart and are free from envy. Why? It's because when we give up our envy of Krishna, and this is the root of our problem, we're envious of Krishna because we are Krishna's servant and we don't like it. We want to be independent lords ourselves. So that's envy. So the Bhagavatam is ultimately for those who are free from envy, nimatsaranam satam, but also it is so powerful that it will remove slowly or quickly these obstacles from our heart. So we have to go on hearing and hearing and hearing and hearing, and gradually more and more the taste will come. Any questions or comments?
Will you see the Abhiya Svatantra? There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita. It says that persons who have acted honestly in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are free from the dualities of greed and the occasions of this world. It seems that that's a prerequisite.
It is that point has been explained actually in Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. It's not that brings bhakti. It is the actual free will of the Madhyam Bhakta that blesses. He puts his glance upon pious people and he gives them bhakti. But it is his free will, which means it is bhakti's free will. But certain person may attract it. If someone is pious and sincere, it may attract it. And the proof of that it is not a prerequisite for bhakti is tara shakshi jagaya madaya. This is the proof. And what to speak of at least one person. And Prabhupada said that he created our piety. And that's so much the business of ISKCON, to make the impious pious and to make the pious more pious. Because it's only due to impiety that we're attracted to Maya. It's only impiety. And actually Krishna will say, or the sutta will say later that, because we talked that time about what the sukriti or punya. So he says, by hearing, shunvitam svakata Krishna, by hearing, this is punya shravana kirtanam. This shravanam kirtanam is the highest bhakti.